So chapter 15, Prameya Jivatattva. I'm going to do a little bit of a different format, and I'll explain it after I just read the introduction. The next day, Vrajanath reached Srivasangram earlier than on previous days. The Vaishnavs from Goja would also come before evening to take darshan of Sandhya Arti. Sri Premdas, Paramahamsa Babaji, Vaishnav Das, Advaita Das, and other Vaishnavas were already seated in the Arti Mandap. When Vrajanath saw the Babas of the Vaishnavas from Grodrum, he was struck with anger and thought, I will perfect my life by having their association as soon as possible. When those Vaishnavas saw his humble and devotional disposition, all of them bestowed their blessings on Vrajanath. When the artik was over, Vrajanath and the elderly Babaji began to walk southwards towards the direction of Godrum. Raghunath Das Babaji saw an incessant stream of tears flowing from Vrajanath's eyes, and feeling very affectionate towards him, asked lovingly, Baba, why are you weeping? Vrajanath said, Prabhu, I remembered your sweet instructions. When I remember them, my heart becomes restless. The entire world seems to be devoid of all substance. My heart is becoming eager to take shelter of Sri Gauranga Dev's lotus feet. Please be merciful to me and tell me who I really am according to Tattva and why I have come to this world. Om Jnanatimanandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Naksur Nmulatam Yena Asmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Dapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Pitamayam Dati Sapatantikam Vansha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Shindu Bayevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Yadvaita Gadadha Srivasade Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So greetings from Basant Falls, my home in America. I'm going to explain a little bit about how I'm going to change the format of this Jiva Dharma. Completely satisfied. Now I'll explain to you why. But it was an incredible week in Bhakti. We had the Lotus Festival in New York, absolutely packed. Maybe 300 people in the temple, 125 people downstairs watching on video. Sure, another 100 people didn't come because they knew it would be so crowded, and I'm sure there were people that were turned away also. So, but it was such a well organized festival. And I have a pretty good standard for these things, and everything from the feast to the serve out to the crowd control to the cooperation of devotees, everything was really wonderful. And then this year I stayed in Bhakti Center for an internal program. We have a big program on Thursday, and Radha Govinda Mandir has their program, and we had our, and it was beautiful, you know, and I got to do Hari Katha, explain Krishna's pastimes and different interesting points about them. And then got to bed at 1:30, got up at 5, and by 6, I was out going upstate and got here in time to give my class, and then went to Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja here and was honored to sit in the presence of Satsarupa Maharaj and Jayadvaita Maharaj, who among the first 15, 20 devotees in Second Avenue they joined. You know, really the most senior of our Vaishnavas. And also Rabindra Sarup Prabhu and his wife, who substantial service. Those you don't know, of course, Rabindra Sarup has a PhD, but he used it in Vaishnav scholarship, and Ram Roy. But then after that, we had a second function after the feast, which was also incredible. Our cook across the street is one of the best, and no one I've ever seen makes sweet rice like him, not even close. And everything was, the cooks were fantastic, from the kachoris, because Prabhupada liked kachoris, to samosas, to different, I mean, it was really fantastic. And then so many more devotees came, because my neighbor, we share the same courtyard, Mother Kalini passed away, and she was a living lady saint, and people were pouring in. I mean, from people who were the heads of yoga studios locally, three of them, and I can see there, to Radhanath Swami, who came up for that, to to Gauravani, and so many people spoke, and there was at least four couples there that were personally married by her, and people sent letters, and I had, you know, just a realization, and two realizations is this famous statement, you're remembered more for how you made people feel than what you've accomplished. And what you've accomplished can, you know, is kind of, you know, is there for people to see in your life, but a lot of times what people feel is not revealed until you're gone. And people open their hearts, you know, and, you know, I have some, I don't know, credit, renown as a good speaker, but I mean, I was humbled, even the simplest people who never spoke, how eloquent they were when they opened their hearts and the deep feelings they had, and I never even realized the extent of it, honestly speaking. And each one was better than the next, and fortunate that she was my neighbor for so many years, and we've had a very close friendship. Just dedicated, surrendered, humble, detached, hardworking, and you know, took care of the cows at Kidanagari and worshipped the deities for so many years, and was the foundation of that project, which was, the, you know, really when Prabhupada was leaving India for the last time, he was going there to show the devotees how to live off the land. So it was, you know, very wonderful. Now, the new format, you know, especially now, I mean, it comes easier in India in the morning, but a lot of times speaking in the evening, especially when I'm traveling, becomes very, you know, so I'm very tired half the time. Because I go to bed early also, and I wake up early to just sleep. So the first thing I know is I have to just make sure I get a rest in the afternoon and that I'm up for the class. The other thing is my mind works very, very quickly, so I generally don't need time that much time to prepare any of the classes. and I studied many of these things before, but the Jiva Dharma is just so deep and so rich. And this is really just very, for people who are serious about learning tattva, for really learning systematically the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, because every nuance and every nuance of the Krishna conscious philosophy is discussed basically in detail here. So, I really have to prepare this much more. So I think from now on, I'm really going to focus on this. And in terms of this Jiva Tattva Pramaya, this 15th chapter, Pramana is the evidence that something is true, and Pramaya is the object of knowledge, what we should understand. I'm going to have to spend my early morning hours the day before, like, preparing it. And you know, so that we can go over things. Just when I went over it this morning very, very early, I see so many things that I missed that were so important. So I'm going to go over this chapter again, and then we're going to begin a much more serious study. And then also, I know how it works here with, you know, it's okay if I can say inspirational things, but this is serious study. And I know how it works also in this thing. I mean, I've kept this up for 10 years, I think. And I think I kept it up for 10 years because of the consistency of it, but the quality of the classes. And if, you know, people are busy, if I miss, they may not come back. So I really want to take this seriously. Let's go. We're going to go over it again because there's so much good stuff here. We're following the story now of Vrajanath, who formerly was a logician and somehow we had that story how he came to Krishna consciousness. And now he's really going to delve deeply into the tattvas of Krishna consciousness with his guru. And we're going to follow him for most of the book now. And you know, somehow he got to Bhakti Lata Beach, the seat of devotional service. And from that, he very, very much changed and developed the sweet taste of humility rather than the sweet at the beginning but bitter at the end taste of pride and control. And he became that. And when you become that, it's very, very attractive. When your life is ruled by truth rather than your impulses, it's very, very detached. That's what detachment is, to follow truth rather than your impulses. And there's a certain beauty of it when someone is so serious in Krishna consciousness, so dedicated, so surrendered. So it's attractive. And even though he's a newcomer, all these senior Babaji's are very, very impressed with him. And here we see he just breaks down before his... They're impressed with him, but he breaks down before his guru. And bhakti's from the heart. It's nice to see tears. I'm very impressed with Gauravani, even at Mother Kalini's, when he spoke, at the very end when he spoke. He spoke with such conviction and such emotion. You know, when you see one's heart and devotion, it's a very beautiful thing. So he breaks down before his guru, who am I and why I've come to this world? Can you according to Tatva, according to this subject, please explain this to me. And then the guru says, the Dayajiva asks such question, they are blessed. When you inquire about the absolute truth, when this becomes at the forefront of your consciousness, you are blessed. You are blessed. And that's how guru comes, when you actually inquire into the truth in your heart. When you want that, then it appears externally. The Dayajiva asks such a question, they are blessed. So, this question leads to the continuation of the explanation by his guru of the Dashamula. The Dashamula are 10 philosophical statements that are sutras for the whole gamut of Krishna consciousness, for all Krishna conscious philosophy. So he explains it in the Dasamula, the Jiva Tattva, in the fifth verse of the Dasamula, where it says, just as many tiny sparks burst from a blazing fire, so the innumerable jivas, like atomic spiritual particles in the rays of the spiritual sun, Sri Hari. Though these jivas are non-different from Sri Hari, they are also eternally different from him. The eternal difference between the jiva and Ishvara is that Ishvara is the Lord and the Master of Maya, whereas the jiva can fall under the control of Maya, even in his liberated stage, due to his constitutional nature. So Vrajanav, who really plays really the role of the perfect disciple, and one must inquire. So he said, what's the evidence of this? The Dashamula is a philosophical summary, but where is the Shastra Pramad? Where is the evidence directly by the Shastra? So his guru goes to the Upanishads, and many verses explains that verses will say that the jiva should inquire about the inanimate world and the spiritual world. Two things, the inanimate material world and the spiritual world, and understanding that the jiva is in a third position, which is svapnasthana. He's in a dreamlike state, and is in the juncture between them, tatastha, between these two worlds. He's right between them, and he can see them both. Sometimes it's called the marginal potency, tatastha shatya. So it's his nature to be situated and see both. Like right now, it's our nature. We're seeing matter, we're seeing spirit, and we're constantly faced with that choice. And somehow or other, we are part of God. We're part of God. We have to be a particular part. And we have the potential for perfection, but we also have the potential for imperfection. We are marginal potency. So then he asks, what is the meaning of the word tatastha? And it's very interesting. He describes, just like between the ocean and the sea, there's a marginal line of distinction separating the ocean and the line. It's so fine that it cannot be seen with the gross eyes. Even material, the tatta, the forgot what it's called. The shore. The shore. The shore is not the ocean. The shore is not the land. So the space between the ocean and the land is called tata. Tata. Tata is but so, you know, really, where is the shore? Because the place that touches the ocean is actually nothing but the land. So it's a really, by that analogy, he describes the jivas are marginal because they have manifest from this shakti of Krishna called the tatastha shakti, the marginal potency. They've manifested from this particular shakti. And then he asks, what is the nature, the tatastha swabhav of this? He said it's a nature to be situated and see both sides. Is there, then he asked, is there a material component in the jiva's original constitution? And he says, no, it comes from the chit shakti, not the maya shakti, the living entity. Just as the sparks come from the fire, that they can be covered, but the spark is fire. It may be covered by the water, it may be covered by the land, but it's not land or water, it's fire. So we are godlike, but we can be covered because we are manute. Now, this is the part I really want to, that I really missed. There's all these arguments against Mayavadi philosophy. What I like about them so much is they're all arguments that I've actually used or have come to the understanding to actually see them written so clearly kind of confirmed. So I think the serious students that hear this class, we should hear this. So Vrajanath previously had a teacher who was Mayavadi. So he said he heard from his teacher that the Chit Brahma, God, becomes Jiva when covered by Maya. And they gave an example that the sky is unlimited, but when it's enclosed in a pot, it becomes the sky in the pot. It becomes somehow limited. And similarly, the jiva is originally Brahman, but when Brahman is covered by Maya, it becomes like the sky in the pot, somehow darkened, limited, transformed. He says, is this conception proper? And Babaji said, no, this is Mayavad, because how can Maya touch God? How can Maya cover God when the Brahman is covered by Maya? And furthermore, in Mayavadi philosophy, and this is really interesting, in Mayavadi philosophy, where everything is illusion, there's no shakti. We say jitma, yasya, yataha. God is that from which everything else comes. But Mayavadis don't believe there is anything else. And what comes from God is shakti. What emanates from the source is shakti, or energy. They believe any distinction is illusion. So how can Maya Shakti cover God if Maya Shakti itself is an illusion? I mean, it just doesn't hold up. Maya covers God, but they don't even believe that Maya exists. And if Maya, yeah, so how can Maya, which is cover God? And the whole idea with Mayavadi philosophy is that the absolute truth is one. So it can't be divided. It can't be controlled. Anyway, just that argument alone. So this is typical Mayavadi philosophy. It just doesn't hold up. Because Brahman can't be divided, and that which the Mayavadis say divided itself is an illusion. So it just doesn't hold up, makes sense. Then Vrijanath asked another question. He said, once another teacher said that the jiva is nothing but a reflection of Brahman. The sun is reflected in water, and similarly, Brahman jiva, which is reflected in Maya, so I'll just read the answer here. Again, this is simply another example of Mayavadi philosophy. Brahman has no limits, and the limitless entity can never be reflected. The idea of limiting Brahman is opposed to the conclusion of the Vedas, so this theory of reflection is to be rejected. So now he gives a third argument. These ones I really want to get into. A Diktajai Pandit, that means a scholar that's conquered everyone, once told me that in reality, there is no substance known as jiva. One only thinks of himself as jiva because of illusion. And when the illusion is removed, one sees that in reality, there is only indivisible Brahman. Is this correct? There's no jiva. One only thinks himself as a jiva. God thinks himself as a jiva because of illusion. And when the illusion is removed, we see there's only indivisible Brahman. Is this correct? And the Babaji clears this up. And this is a classic argument. I'll just say it another way. Is if they say that jiva is only God in illusion. So first thing you have to ask is, who's an illusion? Now they'll say the jiva, but the jiva itself is an illusion. What is the foundation of illusion? The jiva itself is an illusion. So something has to be an illusion. So, and if you say Brahman is an illusion, you're saying that Brahman is not actually Brahman. If you say God is an illusion, then there's something greater than God. So, Mayavadi doctrine, which is popular in certain ways, it doesn't have a foundation because they can't explain the foundation of illusion. And the other argument given here, if you say there's illusion, then you negate Mayavadi philosophy is undifferentiated oneness. And if now you're saying there's two things. There's God, and if you say that illusion is a separate, independent element, then you no longer have advayam, non-dual Brahman. You have dual Brahman. You have another reality there. So self-contradicting philosophy, because they can't explain what is the substance of illusion, what is the foundation of illusion. And you have to say Brahman, and then it's not Brahman. And then if you say the illusion is a separate independent entity, then you have two things, and it's not Vayamgan. It's not undivided oneness. So this is why I wanted to go over these. They're very, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, more and more I'm appreciating his brilliance and how his mind works so analytically. My God, it's so satisfying. Vrajanath, once a fiery Brahmin pandit arrived in Navadvip, and in a conference of intellectuals, he established that only the jiva exists. His theory was that this jiva creates everything in dreams, and because of this, he enjoys happiness and suffers distress. When the dream breaks, he sees that he's nothing but Brahman. So Bobby, this is again Mayavadi. If they say Brahman is undifferentiated, how can it possibly produce the jiva in its dreaming state? This is the basic answer to Mayavadi philosophy. If it's undivided oneness, that every distinction is illusion, so how can it produce the jiva? And they use examples as you see mother of pearl, and an oyster is gold, and taking the rope to be a snake. But this indicates that there is an object, and there's something you mistake it for. So their philosophy, Bhaktivinoda says, cannot provide a consistent basis for Advayamgan. It can't provide a consistent basis for undifferentiated oneness. Because every time they try to explain the world, they have to explain in relationship to duality. They have no explanation. So now, I mean, for the rest of the day, we're on. Yes. Now, in English. Technical. But I think the basic point we're going to get at is...
Maharaj, we're losing you, or we've actually lost you.
How long did you lose me?
Just a few seconds ago.
How are we doing now?
About to begin... Right now is good, but you're kind of breaking
okay,
up.
Okay, let me look. Okay, I'm getting a few more bars. Yeah, it's getting better now.
Okay.
Okay, but thank you. And you can also send me an email because I got the thing on if it gets bad. So what I'm saying is the next section, I think it's very difficult to figure out. I don't really have faith that even the English translation is proper. And, but what I get out of it, what the explanation is going to explain, what he wants to show, is that the jiva, living entity, comes from a separate Shakti of God. It comes then the Nityasiddha living entity, it's the eternally perfected souls. Although he will make the point that when you perform sadhana, the jiva, living entity, can enjoy the same happiness as the Nityasiddhas. But the chit shakti, the jiva shakti, is an incomplete energy of God, and therefore The living entities are manifested from that incomplete shakti and therefore minute. I'm going to read. So the question that Bhadranath asks now, he says, Maya has nothing to do with creating the sarupa of the jivas. This has to be accepted. So it doesn't come from illusion. You have to accept that. He just proved that. At the same time, I have clearly understood that the jiva is by nature subject to the influence of Maya. I've understood that. It's not a product of Maya, but it's subject to the influence of Maya because it is tatastha. Now I want to know, did the chit shakti create the jivas with their tatastha swabhav, marginal nature? So what is the origin of the jivas? Did the chit shakti, and you remember we discussed in the previous chapter the shakti tattva, that there's the chit shakti, there's the maya shakti, and there's the jiva shakti. So it doesn't come from the maya shakti. The maya shakti covers the jiva. So did the chit shakti create the jivas with this marginal potency? The answer, Babaji, says no. The chit shakti is the complete shakti of Krishna, and her manifestations are all nitya siddha beings. So from the chit shakti comes the nitya siddha. The jiva is not nitya siddha, although when he performs sadhana, he can become sadhana siddha and enjoy transcendental happiness like the nitya siddha. All four types of Radharani's saktis are nitya siddha, and they are direct expansions. Kaya vyuha, the chit shakti, Radhika self. So it says the nitya siddhas are actually direct. Kaya Vyuha means they are expansions of Radharani. They're not really even separate entities in form. That's what it's basically saying. They are Kaya Vyuha. I used to say this way back. Kaya Vyuha means, I don't know the exact. The jivas, on the other hand, they don't come from the chit shakti. They're not nitya siddha. They manifest from Sri Krishna's jiva shakti. The chit shakti is Sri Krishna's complete shakti, where the jiva shakti is his incomplete shakti, just as the complete tattvas are all manifest of the complete potency. Simply innumerable conscious jivas are manifest from the incomplete shakti. Krishna establishes himself in each of his shaktis and manifests his sarup according to the nature of that shakti. Now, this is a part where I can't give an explanation. I'm just going to read it. But the main point that's going to be gleaned from this is that the jivas come from another shakti, not the chit shakti. When he's situated in his chit sarup, he manifests his essential sarup, both as Sri Krishna himself and also as Narayan, Vaikuntha. When he is situated in the jiva shakti, he manifests his sarup as the Vilas Murti of Raja Baladev. Now, I don't understand that because Baladev is the source of all incarnations. And when he situated himself in the Maya Shakti, he manifests in three Vishnu forms. Kanadakshay Vishnu, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and Shiradakshay Vishnu. So again, I still haven't figured that out. It's because the English translations and the words, because all incarnations, including Shiradakshay Vishnu and the Vishnus, are coming from Baladeva. In his Krishna form, he manifests all the spiritual paraphernalia and vraj. In his Baladev Sarupa Shesha Tattva, he manifests Nitya Mukta Parishad Jivas, who render eight types of service to Krishna himself, the origin of the Shesha. Nick Turner liberated associates who are jivas. And I don't know what the eight types of service to Krishna is. Again, in Shesha Roop, Shankarshan and Vaikuntha, he manifests eight types of servants to render eight kinds of service as eternally liberated associates of Seshi Roop, the origin of Shesha Tattva Narayan. Okay. Mahavishnu is an expansion of Sankarshan, situates himself in the heart of the Jiva Shakti, and as Paramatma manifests the Jivas in the material world. These Jivas are susceptible to the influence of Maya, and unless they attain shelter of the Ladini Shakti by Bhagavan's mercy, it's impossible that they will be defeated by Maya. So only by the Godhead can you defeat Maya, which is the essence of the Ladini Shakti, and by Bhagavan's mercy. The countless conditioned jivas who have been illusioned by Maya are under the control of the three modes of material nature. Bearing all this in mind, the Siddhanta is, and this is the conclusion, is that it is only the Jiva Shakti and not the Chit Shakti that manifests the jiva. So any questions? This is our new format. We're going to go. I may summarize some things. And
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. I have a question. Oh, my God, my phone wants to die. Okay, let me just transfer it to another one. 1 second.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. I have 2 questions about the jiva. The two apparent contradictions for me. One is, it seems like I'm just learning today that a jiva, in other words, I thought that there are some jivas who come here as conditioned souls, and there are other jivas who never come here, or who have never come here, and who are called Nitya Siddhas. And
okay,
so,
here's where we're going to run into problems. Prabhupada said different things on the same subject, and therefore, I'm just going to say this is what it says there. This is what it says there. Different things have been said, but what it did say previously, or what's going to come up. And I'll read this. And what it's going to come up, and I don't know how satisfactory it'll be, but the next section we're going to read, I think I did explain that in the previous class that I was satisfied with about the limits of understanding of the conditioned state, where all our logic is based on cause and effect, and the spiritual world is beyond time, past, present, and future. So, he said, I advise you not to inquire about this matter from anyone, but to realize it yourself. I've just given you an indication. So, it's just, this has been a big controversy. I'm going through Jiva Dharma. I'm up to this section. This appears to be what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. And Prabhupada says both things. And I don't want to have to resolve them one way or another. Prabhupada said that, once you go to the spiritual world, you never return. He said, we're Nityabuddha, we're eternally conditioned. He also said, he said both things. So it's just a question of realization. But this is what Jiva Dharma says. Jiva Dharma says that the Nitya Siddhas aren't jivas. But jivas can come to that world and become sadhus. And that they don't actually come from the spiritual world. They come from the tatastha shakti. The Prabhupada said something different. I just have to realize it, that's all.
Okay, and also chit shakti It said there also that Chit Shakti, that the Jiva is not Chit Shakti, but is it incorrect to even say that Jiva is Chit Shakti, an infinitesimal version of Chit Shakti? Is that incorrect?
It says the Chit Shakti did not create the Jivas. But I think in another part here, I believe it said that they, let me just go back.
Because I think you explicitly said that the Jiva is not Chit Shakti.
Well, I'm saying exactly what it said here.
Mm-hmm.
Says, is there any material composition in the Jiva's original constitution? It says, no, the Jiva is created solely from the Chit Shakti. And then here it says, did the Chit Shakti create the Jivas with their Tattvastha Bhava? No, the Chit Shakti is the complete Shakti. The Jivas have manifested from Krishna's Jiva Shakti. So I have to think about that and how to resolve it. Because here it says, is there any material component in the Jiva's original constitution? He says, no, the Jiva is created solely from the Chit Shakti. He can be defeated. That is covered by Maya because he is minute. But there's not an iota of Maya in the Jiva's existence. But on the other hand, it does say that the Chit Shakti did not create the Jivas. Maybe it created the Jivas, but not with their Tattvastha Bhava. It's spiritual, but their Tattvastha Bhava, their marginal potency, it comes from someplace else. It comes from the Jiva Shakti. Anyway, I'm going to have to think about that one.
Wait,
anything
else? Just one last thing. I just wanted to try to reconcile the fact that, you know, like according to Ishopanishad, all emanations from the complete are complete. But here we're saying that Jiva is an incomplete energy. So in what respect is it incomplete? If Ishopanishad says that it's, you know, everything that comes from it is complete.
Well, I'm trying to say what it means is complete. It doesn't mean they're God.
No.
Right? It means that they're a separate unit. It doesn't mean they are the whole unit. It means they're a separate unit. So that's the thing. I mean, incomplete here is when you use the English words, they don't somehow correspond with the Sanskrit meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Because there, what it means is the Supreme Personality of God is perfect and complete. And even though so many units emanate from him, he remains the complete balance. So, in other words, there are separate units that come. But they don't mean they have a full potency, but they're separate units. And that they're complete in the sense they're separate functional units. They're not complete in the sense that they're purna. The Sanskrit word is purna, full. So I don't know if when they talk about complete here, they're talking about purna or full. Or when they talk about incomplete, they're not meaning that it doesn't mean that they're not separate, independent, functional units. So it's just a question of how the English words are used in translation.
So incomplete here just means it's not God? Jiva is not God? Is that what the meaning is? Or what does it mean?
Well,
incomplete energy.
It just says it just says here it's manifest from the incomplete Shakti. It means it's minute. It's not God. It's not the enjoyer. It's the enjoyed. It's not the controller. It's the controlled. It's not the full manifestation. Yeah. Incomplete means. Incomplete means it doesn't have full potency. Yeah, it means it's not God.
Okay,
thank you, Gail.
Thank you.
Anybody else like to ask a question or say hello?
And by the way, I'm still recovering from not having known that you were speaking at...
I hope we can find that tape for you.
Mm-hmm.
Megan taped it. Recovering from that. And you know, in my mind, I was thinking, you know, on these functions that you go to your temple in Tulaco.
I know, but I could have gone there and then also gone there.
That's true.
Especially since it was so unfulfilling, actually, this test. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, I'll ask me.
Am I right?
Yeah.
I'm in.
Hi, Bo.
Please accept my invitation. Thank you for your nice talk. My question is about Sri Baladev and Sri Radha. So, Sri Radha, I heard, you know, is the Purna Shakti. So,
yeah.
And then Sri Baladev, I've also heard in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he's described as the Chit Shakti Ashraya. And
yeah. So
Sri Baladev, as far as I've understood, he's kind of, I don't want to say, for lack of a better word, sort of in charge of the Dandini and Samvit potencies, and Radha is in charge of the Vladini kind of potency. So, but the thing is that Sri Baladev, it seems like he's Vishnu Tattva, but at the same time, sometimes it looks like he's Shakti Tattva because he's in that mood of service. And then also Sri Radha, and sometimes I've heard, you know, that she is Bhagavan, or, you know, she's also like of the same quality as Krishna. So I'm trying to understand, like, Sri Radha and Sri Baladev. And
the essence of all Shakti is to please. That's the essence of all Shakti. And Radharani is the Ladini Shakti. So the chief Shakti is Ladini, because it's all meant to please.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and it's described, you know, the flower and the scent. You know, the flower and its color. There's a flower and it has qualities. Without Radha, then Krishna is Brahman, you know. So if she's the Purna Shakti, somehow it's mentioned only in one place that she's the full Shakti. And it also mentions Ladini Shakti. Therefore, I can only conclude that Ladini Shakti, the pleasure potency, is the essence of all Shaktis. And in terms of Baladev, Baladev is Vishnu Tattva.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the
okay.
servant to a Godhead. He's not Shakti, he's Krishna himself. But somehow or other, in this technical sense, which I'm it can be endlessly figured out. You know, in that sense, yeah, Balaram is sometimes, you know, the Chit Shakti, and sometimes he's the Sandini Shakti, and then sometimes it says Krishna's Sarup comes from the, you know, the Samvit Shakti. So I just think the simple way is that there is a Purna Shakti, there is a Sarup Shakti, and, you know, somehow or other, Radha is that Sarup Shakti, but Radha also manifests specifically as a Ladini Shakti, And then from the Sarup Shakti comes all the other Shaktis. Because essence is to please, so Radha manifests the full love. But the essence is to please, and then to please, there's no other reason for Shakti. To please, there must be existence. To please, there must be knowledge. There must be cognitive potency. There must be existential potency. And ultimately, there must be the pleasure potency. So the others are like foundational. They're, you know, they support the Ladini Shakti. It's all for prema. It's all for pleasure. So Radharani, who is the manifestation of Krishna for pleasure, and Krishna himself, of course, it says basically that Baladeva does the work of all, you know, all affairs of existence and knowledge. He's Krishna manifesting everything as the support. But the actual support is Guru Tattva, and there's the Vishnus as the actual support. But so it seems to be somehow or other. Yeah, it can't be. Then there's the manifestation of the various Shaktis. So it seems like Balaram is Krishna that gets it all going in that way, and Radha gets it going in another way, and somehow they all come together for Krishna's pleasure. That's about as far as I can go.
So basically, Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, and then even his own self is kind of involved in supporting his own pleasure and enjoyment as Baladev.
Yeah, somehow or other. And I guess because, even when it comes down to it, it doesn't exactly fit. I'm not sure anybody's going to be able to explain it. And therefore, that statement was there, which we'll discuss the next time. That statement, I advise you not to inquire about this matter from anyone, but to realize itself. I've just given you an indication. So I think, even if you have the biggest scholar, I don't think they're necessarily resolve all these things. Honestly speaking, it's at a certain level, it's going to have to come at realization.
Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Govardhan Bhaktadas.
Govardhan, thank you. Stalwart. Your wife sent me a picture of the deities that you and her dressed. Beautiful. Wonderful.
Thank you, Maharaj.
The fortune of having Radha and Krishna. Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, we'll end for now. Bunch of love through.